Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is proud to be sponsored by Trupanion, medical insurance for pets. The last thing that we want is for our pets to become sick or injured. Thankfully, Trupanion's policy provides coverage for unexpected accidents and illnesses to take the financial stress off of a vet visit. Added bonus, Trupanion's policy includes coverage for things like pyometra, and you have the option to add a breeding rider at an additional cost. This rider can help cover your breeding pet's emergency C-sections in the event that they ever need one. And Trupanion wants to be able to support reputable breeders, which is why they also offer a free program for breeders so you can send your litters home with an offer to try out insurance. Find out more about how you can send your litters home protected by Trupanion by following the link to my partner page. And don't forget to mention, Pure Dog Talk sent you. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I have really an exciting guest for you guys today. You know how much I love to talk to our master breeders around the world. Well, I'm bringing you one from right here in the U.S. This is Dale Martinson, Touche Japanese Chin. And when we talk about master breeders, there's things, you know, kind of benchmarks, right? I'm pretty sure Dale's like blowing the doors off the benchmarks. He has produced over 500 champions, over 20 national specialty winners since, Dale, you're going to step in here, the early 80s, the mid 80s.
1983.
Yeah. So I'm saying, guys, this is a guy we're going to pay attention to, right? I know I'm paying attention. So Dale, welcome. Thank you so much. I'm really, really excited to have you join us.
Well, thank you so much for asking me. It's a privilege.
It is an honor to have you here and share your thoughts. So we have everybody do what we like to call the 411 here. Give us just a little bit of background, how you came to purebred dogs. I understand you and your wife met at a dog show. So let's hear the story.
We did. And you know, it was kind of a fun story. I had an uncle who gave me a St. Bernard puppy. And while I was negotiating at 10, 11 years of age with my mother, I had to promise obedience classes.
Yep.
And then the next thing you know, they had confirmation classes after the obedience classes. And that just went all downhill from there.
And what was the line you just told me? If we could get all of our entry money back, we could each have an island.
There you go. Exactly. So there would be no national debt. We could just
pay it all off.
Yeah, we could just cover that. Exactly. So just the appreciation of purebred dogs and the things that we could do with them. And my St. Bernard went on to have a CDX and just scent dog. And I enjoyed training and working, finding out the value of purposely bred dogs and the things that they can excel at and how we can pick the dog that best fits our lives.
Yes, absolutely. And you and Jane had Cockers, right, for a while before you started in the Chin?
American Cockers. That was our original breed. We had American Cockers. They were the hot and heavy things
right through
the 70s, 80s, on into the 90s, a high competition breed. And we enjoyed and had some pretty good success, a couple of best in show winners, a couple of top producers. We got to learn how to lose. And I think we all come into this with an appreciation for competition, but we showed our dogs for 2 years and never won a single point.
Mm.
We packed up, we congratulated, we learned, we went back, sat there and figured out, what do we need to do better? How can we improve our dogs competitive? And you get a lot of honesty in those 2 years of driving home from shows without any points.
Right. And I think that we'll get into this more later, but just sort of the cultural difference between, because I started about the same time in the early 80s with my family, and the cultural difference between I'm going to keep losing for 2 years and keep doing it versus today and the difference in those 40 years and I lost twice, I'm going home, I'm never coming back, is a very different mindset.
Right. Now everybody has to have a ribbon.
Right.
There's a participation award, and that's perhaps original dog showing. There was winning and there was losing.
Yeah.
And you either got good or you got out.
Yeah. And there was no whining. I mean, my first mentor at dog shows wound up being Don Rogers, a professional handler who had to finish the... Right? Exactly. Now you know something. Who had to finish the Clumber Spaniels that my parents acquired, the first ones, because I wasn't a good enough handler. I was 15 or whatever.
And sometimes that was just the case. The dog was good enough, but just the depth of presentation and conditioning.
Right. Exactly.
And honestly, there was a degree of respect for those people that would, and those were the people we wanted to learn from.
And that's who I did learn from. And the very first one that I finished on my very own was, we were 6+ years into it by the time we got to one that I could finish as a kid. And I showed all the dogs. Like, my parents said, great, here you go.
Well, yes, but you perfected your craft and you learned your breed.
Yes.
And you learned what made them good and what made one better than another.
Yes.
And how to accentuate the good. And when you actually know your dogs and can compete with your dogs, you know the areas that you want to breed and improve with your dogs.
Yes.
If you just send them off and they come back champions, well, you don't really know why they won, what made them good, what made them better.
Yes.
And what areas you needed to breed to improve on.
I love that. And I really want to take that and make a little pivot here to talk about the breeding program that you guys have developed with the Chin. Because to me, you're talking about a breed that you have, what, 2 or 3 puppies in a litter, and you've managed to produce 500 champions. To me, that is, it leaves me speechless.
Well, thank you. They are the hardest of all of the toy dogs to raise because not only are they a single digit in weight and they're brachycephalic, but we also have criteria for markings.
Mm.
So you can have the best puppies in the whole world, but if they're not marked right, you've got nothing.
Mm.
So no other breed has that trifecta of challenge. But what we really have developed over time was we came up with our A and B list of faults. And our A list of faults were things that we would not keep an animal for breeding because whether it was a structural or a health or a type thing that we didn't want to incorporate into all of our dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And the B list of faults, which it's a long list of faults. There are no faultless dogs. And if they are faultless, they're just probably not any good anyway. But
if they're faultless, you're dreaming.
Yeah. So you really go ahead and say, these are the faults I can live with. And your breed will dictate to what you can live with, you know, because if you have a breed that markings don't matter, then you can put a stronger criteria towards maybe teeth or some other quality.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have a breed where you have a coat, a color pattern, a size and shape type thing, if somebody wanted to go back and look at the old original AKC standards, they used to have a point schedule and they would list out the qualities and the things about each breed and they would assign a point value to this.
Mm-hmm.
So like for Japanese Chin, for head, ears, eyes, and tail, that was 65 points.
Wow.
So what that was telling you is if you don't have those benchmarks, those hallmarks of the breed, then you didn't have a show quality specimen. And those were the things that you would really keep in mind. Those would be your non-negotiable traits.
Right.
And it would work from there.
What's on your A list? What is the things that you absolutely would not breed?
We, because we came from a markings breed,
mm-hmm.
we would not consider breeding a mismark. Even though they can be masked over, we call those dogs that are beautifully marked from mismarked stock, we call them a Trojan horse.
Right.
Because you drag them home and they're beautiful and you pull them in and the next thing you know, all of your dogs are carrying that gene.
Right.
And then you're going to have a percentage because you will get mismarking without breeding it. You don't have to try.
Mm.
The next thing with us is we always wanted to breed a dog that was a one-piece dog. And this was something from breed to breed to breed. If you had a breed that was supposed to have a short loin and a tightly coupled top line, then it didn't look like a truck and trailer.
Mm-hmm.
That was a one-piece dog. And those dogs, they were built right and they moved right. And all of the pieces fell in place one after another. Because if you had this, if you had that tight short coupling, then you automatically would have a depth of rib spring, which would mean you'd have post sternum And if you have postern, you most likely have good buttocks.
Right.
And all of that stuff fit together. You had a very hard time having a dog with a short loin and a tight back that would have a bad tail set.
Nice.
All of those qualities seem to fit together, where you could get longer, more tubular animals, and maybe you could get them through grooming and training and teaching them how to walk right. You could make them look like a show dog, but when you went to breed them, it would all come out in the wash.
Can I just insert my very favorite breeding paradigm? Fix it in the whelping box, not the tack box. Sorry. Thank
there you.
You
go. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, because when it comes to dog showing, a lot of people will say, we're judging breeding stock. No, we are not judging breeding stock. We are judging the end result to the standard. You can't be judging breeding stock if you're going in there without health testing and pedigrees and all of these things that are productivity. These are all breeding stock things. We're judging that dog to the standard, which one is the closest. And many times the dogs in toy breeds, especially in extreme breeds, that are so close to perfect, those dogs are endings. They're not beginnings. They're probably not going to produce, have high production records for you because they're an end result. So you start out a beginning, and then you work to this point, and then you get to the pinnacle. And that particular dog may be the pinnacle of your breed type. But it may not, you know, its plainer sister may be the one at home that produces the champions for you.
Interesting. Absolutely fascinating. And from what I've seen, I think often true for sure. Talking about that, talking to that piece where you've got that really fabulous dog that maybe it's not going to pass it on because it's the pinnacle and the ugly duckling sister, right? How do you make that? I mean, what tells you that? You know, how do I know that? I've got this beautiful, how do I know? That's it.
Okay, that's a good question. There are the things that make a dog excel in the show ring that may not be genetically beneficial as far as it has an extra degree of showmanship. Mm-hmm. It eats a little better on the road. It's got extra flashy markings. All of these things that would make it a wonderful show dog, that doesn't necessarily translate into that it's going to give that to their puppies.
Right.
You know, your breeding animal, maybe that would have a bit more structural integrity. Mm. Maybe it would have a little bit more health as far as like digestive health if you have like a bully breed or something, or mm-hmm. they're hard to keep in weight. But there are the things that make them a good dog, and there are the traits that make a good show dog. You start with a good dog.
Right.
And then you work towards a show dog.
Right. Absolutely.
You have your baseline of quality, and those are the dogs that are nice to live with. Because today, the old kennels are gone.
Oh, yeah.
When we used to handle, we probably had 20 or 30 clients at any given time that would have 30 or 40 dogs.
Mm.
And they had puppies all the time. And
mm-hmm.
that is really no longer the case.
No. Speaking as a handler, I can guarantee you it's not the case.
Yes. I mean, that's not the case. So now it's more of a global fancy. There's lots of importing.
Right.
In the 80s and 90s, oh my gosh, if someone brought an import in, everybody knew it because it was like a comet sighting. You know, I mean, nobody is like, there's an import coming here. Now online with social media, everybody imports. It's all importing. It's the same as buying it from across the country, from another country. It's all important. You know, that's really not anything proprietary or special. And we have done a tremendous amount of importing over the years, but American breeders need to bear a couple of things in mind. There are no DNA samples filed on the import dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So they are what they say they are. So you should always know, don't ever believe your own advertising. And don't discount the value of the things you know for the comfort of the things you don't know. So you are better off dealing with something just rather than a pretty picture of something that you don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mom used to always say the skeletons in her closet, the ones she knew, she much preferred to the ones she didn't know to try and do an outcross.
Oh, Lord. Yes. Yes. And I think that nowadays with the current attitudes, people are not quick to want to share their dogs. And so people are forced into importing dogs because they want to get out from under contracts and obligations and all of the things that go along with getting a dog in the United States nowadays.
Right. Well, and I think that that's something that we can all speak to and think about from when you started, you know what I'm going to say. when we started, the people at dog shows were breeders. That's who went to dog shows.
Yes.
Today, the people that go to dog shows are exhibitors.
Yes, exactly.
And we need more breeders.
And if you asked any of them, do any of them make money with their dogs, they would be horrified.
Right.
And they would say, no, we don't make money with our dogs. Well, my answer to that is, well, then you're not doing it very well. Because it should be a self-funding hobby, and you should be able to get out of it what you put back into it. And there's no shame in making money with your dogs. Every person at the dog show, the judges, the vendors, the handlers, you know, the superintendent, everybody's making money. The breeders need to make money too.
Need to at least be able to break even, right? I mean, come on.
You should be able to comfortably pay for your health testing. You should be able to pay for the things you need for your dog for the proper housing. You should be able to say, I have the money to go ahead and breed this bitch to something off the cuff, not just because I have to use my own dog because it's convenient.
Right.
We took a bitch to Rome to be bred because that's what we needed to do.
Right.
That's where we wanted to, you know, we had best in show dogs sitting in our own kennel. We could have bred her to.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that if you invest more, you get more.
Absolutely. And I want to keep really dialing in on the breeding piece, because this is so valuable to my listeners, people that most of them are just getting started and getting knowledge from the people here on the show.
Then what they really need to work on, if you really truly want to be a breeder today and on any level, and you hear this thrown around all the time, and they'll say, my line, I this, my that. And your line is not a bunch of dogs with your breeding kennel name on it. That's not a line. Your line is your bitch line.
Yes.
And your quality is what comes through your bitches. And no matter how small a breeder, if you work with a couple of really quality bitches, that you can go different directions and keep tying that in. The single record that I probably actually do know that we've done with our dogs that is actually the most important and relevant record is our top producing bitches.
Mm-hmm.
One of our bitches produced 18 champions, and it wasn't like 18 champions that were built majors to finish. We're talking,
right?
We brought multiple best at show dogs,
we're right.
talking national specialty winners, dogs that went on to be relevant to the breed. That right there is a cornerstone of a breeding program.
Right.
So when you have those bitches, then you can continue. You don't have to have a bunch of dogs, which is really not done anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a good core line of bitches and you keep your bitch line sound and clean, and you know, don't believe the ads and don't believe what you read on social media, believe in what you see in touch with your own eyes and hands.
Right.
Then you can go ahead and you can maintain a small but effective program through good, better than good bitches. That's what a line is based on, is your bitches.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And I wonder if you can speak to, because chin are so difficult to breed. So you've got one bitch that produced 18 champions. That is phenomenal. How do you deal with the ones that can't produce, can't get bred, can't whelp, can't, you know, all of those things, right, that come to us?
That's an A-list fault.
Right.
Production and reproduction and productivity is a quality. So just like that flashy marking or that extra long coat or whatever, if you want to spend a bunch of money on dogs that are going to be problems to produce, these dogs, if you have to push a peanut up the hill but with your nose to get puppies out of them, then you've got a few more hills ahead of you. You've got to look at the reproductive quality and the integrity of your program with honest eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Lie to whoever else you want to, but you better look at them with honest eyes yourself and say, this is a problem. If I'm getting cleft palates, if I'm getting water puppies, if I'm getting bitches that don't produce milk, you know, all of these things, you have to figure out what you're willing to do. And when you start hand raising a bunch of dogs and you have a bunch of, you know, this is an old breeder term, throwaway.
Right.
Dogs that you're going to raise and spend a bunch of time and money on and give away to somebody.
Right.
And just say, oh, here, take this. Tell them you got it from my competition.
That's terrible.
If you raise those, that will become what you have.
Right.
So you have to be honest with that and really look to see what you have in your stock, what you're going to be breeding from. So if she's a good mom and she raises a nice puppy, that's a quality. And that's something to be appreciated.
Yeah.
You should have your show puppy. You should have maybe a show puppy for your friend and maybe a couple of nice pet puppies to go ahead and pay for the entries on your show puppies.
Right.
That's how the old-time breeders based a line.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. So, hey, crew. New year, new decade. Let's have some new Pure Dog Talk promos while we're at it, shall we? All right. Our patrons group continues to grow and thrive. It's like the NPR of dogdom. It's so cool. And Pure Dog Talk offers you, my loyal listeners, an opportunity to get in on the fun. Pure Dog Talk patrons are invited to join a closed Facebook chat group just for you. And I promise you, no drama mamas, no keyboard warriors, just fabulous, supportive, Pure Dog Talk fans. That's it. Each month, I pick a photo submitted by our patrons group to be the cover image on the Facebook page. You guys have seen it. And anybody with a quick question gets immediate feedback from moi personally, as well as input from the array of patron group members. Pretty fun. The patrons group also gets first dibs on podcast topic suggestions. So if you have something you want to hear about, that's a good way to do it. And to celebrate the new year, I'm adding a whole new technological challenge to my life. Oh my God. I will be hosting Facebook Live discussions for patrons only on the final Monday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific time zone.
Yeah, baby, yeah!
Y'all join us from wherever you are, but that's when they'll be. Just a few of our planned topics of conversation include advertising on a shoestring budget. Yeah, trust me, we can talk about that. Campaigning a special just for owner handlers. Problem solving the stack. Tricks of the trade for grooming, like what products do I like or anybody else like. Open mic Q&As, all that kind of stuff. What you guys need to know is that the generosity of Pure Dog Talk's patrons is literally what keeps the MP3s running here. The money is set aside exclusively for overhead and operational expenses. That's it. Now, I'm incredibly grateful to our corporate sponsors. You have no idea. They have the dedication to purebred dogs and the resources to ensure that Pure Dog Talk remains a powerful voice for purebred dogs. That you guys, y'all believed in this mission, and you've supported it from the beginning. You are the heart and soul of my crusade to provide all purebred dog lovers a constantly growing, challenging treasure trove of knowledge in a 21st century format.
Like a real world.
So, just click the Be My Patron on Podbean button on the website. It's quick, it's easy, it's secure. And I hope to see all of you on the next Facebook Live chat. I hate hammering on this, but I think it is so important to wrap our heads around it, right? This concept of how much society and culture around us has changed.
Yes. Well, I mean, it has moved from a livestock type of thing
exactly.
More to a, I mean, that's changed. And we're not old until we can't accept and go with change.
Right.
You can tell the last year somebody was cool by looking at their clothes, you know. And you know what? You can raise dogs successfully on a profitable basis with integrity. This is an achievable goal. You don't have to be a martyr.
Right.
And use the tools of what we have now and work with those dogs that are going to take your program to the next level. And be honest about it. If you want to show a dog and you know it's not a good dog for breeding, well, sure, show it. Get a bunch of ribbon. Give it to your sister. You know, but don't delude yourself into the idea that that's part of your program.
And you touched on this, but I would love to have you, your candor is so refreshing. I would love to have you speak to the concept of, we're going to do a hypothetical here. I'm brand new to Chin and I have this cute little bitch and I want to breed it to the biggest winning dog I can find. And that concept of the popular sire and the big winning dog.
Well, that's exactly. I mean, and if you go through and watch one of our very iconic American breeders, Penny Chinnery.
Right.
That bred Secretariat.
Right.
And they talk about sires and talk this. It comes down to your female line.
Yeah.
And showing and records, that's great. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's the best breeding.
Right.
Because unless you can take those ribbons and records in the ring with you, that's where what is important is what you have right in front of you.
Right.
And that's where the great equalizer. So the one thing I love about our sport is that anybody can go in and compete on any level. You don't have to be of a high finance or that kind of thing. It can be your own dog that you raise and go from there. And you can compete with whatever professionals if you do the equal quality.
Right. Equal grooming, equal conditioning, equal quality of the animal, equal presentation, all of those pieces.
All of those things. And you have the advantage as an owner of knowing your animal more intimately.
Right. The teamwork. The teamwork is huge.
Yep, exactly. You should know your best on that. But once you start going in there, and when you're talking about breeding, once you realize what you need to improve on, where your goals are in the ring, then you can go ahead and you can pick those breedings that will best accentuate it, and then be honest about it. And if it doesn't work out, there's no shame in finding them a nice pet home, because that's what we can do nowadays is with the internet. We have the option
right.
of just placing them as great pets.
I was reading an interview you did with Alan Resnick at Showsite Magazine. And one of the things that I saw in there that I was captivated by, because just the branding of it was beautiful, was the, what was it, A Place for Mom?
Yeah.
The rehoming of your breeding bitches. And I think, again, this is so critical. So talk to us a little bit about that concept as a way to be able to continue building a great program and not have to keep 100 dogs.
Well, that's something I really think is really important, is that you cannot be a great breeder and be a hoarder too.
Yes.
So you have to really have a number. Everybody has that number as to what they can work well with him. And then at that point, keep that number. And honestly, you get your nicest puppies out of your girls while they're young.
Mm-hmm.
That's when their hormones are the highest. That's when they're going to do the best for you. So get that girl, breed her, keep back from her, and then find her a wonderful home. And like with our females, we don't breed them past 5.
Right.
We'll breed them if they're in condition and they can have their litters back to back. We'll absolutely do that. But then when they hit 5 years of age, they're still a young enough dog. They can go and be a fantastic pet. And somebody will absolutely love to have them. But the people who want them the most tend to be the people that have puppies from them.
Right.
So whenever we sell a pet puppy, we ask them, would you be interested in having her mom
mm-hmm.
when she's no longer? And because everyone has a soft spot for mom, and they'll put up with a little extra grief from mom because it's mom.
Right.
And that's just it. And, you know, there's always a place for mom.
Love that.
So we keep our girls placed, and we keep back young stock, and keep our program moving forward. Because sometimes I think living in the past doesn't necessarily keep your breeding program current mm-hmm. in the future.
I think that is, I just love that, A Place for Mom. I just thought that was the most genius idea to brand it that way. I think a lot of us do that are trying to maintain a limit. And I always love placing my...
Yeah, you're exactly right.
You can't. I mean, I can't keep a puppy if I have the old dog on the couch, right? And so the old dog deserves to be on the couch, so let's get her a couch of her own. And it's hard. I mean, some of these are like your cart dogs, but I see them playing with somebody's grandchildren.
Absolutely. You get attached to them. Absolutely. But our house was built by a couple, and she was a very famous adoption lady, and she did 10,000 Texas adoptions. Her name was Edna Gladney.
Mm.
And you kind of think about the feeling that you get when you put that very special something into somebody else's life.
Right.
And it is a little selfless, and at times you hate to part with it. I was bemoaning giving away one of my favorite cockers the other day. I had one left, and I placed him in a home for Christmas because it was the right thing for the dog.
Right.
Sometimes you have to put the dog first.
Always put the dog first. Sorry.
Well, yes, but we tend to be a little bit delusional as to, oh, it won't be happy without us because
uh-uh.
we are so fantastic.
Uh-uh.
And in actuality, the dog would be just as happy with somebody else, and maybe happier if they didn't have to compete with the puppies and you right. being gone on the weekends to the shows.
Right, exactly. I see this particular bitch who I just absolutely adored, one of my favorite dogs of all time. and she has grandchildren to play with, and she sleeps on her dad's lap in the recliner. And I'm like, she isn't going to get that here. How can she not love that? And how can I not want that for her?
Well, and then even like when we were talking about how things have changed and how we can, as breeders and fanciers, can do to help, you know, even if you're not a very big prolific breeder, when you place those retired dogs that you have shown and housebroken and you put them with people, your regular families can get a tremendous appreciation for a beautiful purebred dog.
Yes.
And whatever your breed might be, it's going to be an ambassador, and their friends and their family are going to see that fantastic, selectively bred, purebred dog and think, wow, that's better than getting a pit bull chow cross that may or may not bite you.
That came from the shelter three times returned.
Exactly.
And I think that that is absolutely right. They are our best ambassadors. I had another young champion, didn't think he was going to make it as a special, had been raised with a young man that worked for me that then decided he wanted to do sports. So he went to another kid, and now he goes to that kid's baseball games, and everybody on the team thinks this is the coolest dog they've ever met in their lives. You know, I mean, it's just, it's perfect.
Sometimes as breeders, we have to be a little bit selfless.
Mm-hmm.
And not be selfish with our dogs and share about our breed and share about what the purposely bred, purebred dog, you know, the magic of it and finding it the right home.
Absolutely.
And also keeping your dogs in such a way where you know that that dog is going to end up being a pet. In some ways, the old kennels where they didn't do that, those dogs were extremely hard to place.
Yeah.
And so nowadays, we don't need to do that. We can place these dogs. They can go be fantastic members of families and promote the breed. And the more people we have Thanksgiving sitting on the couch watching the National Dog Show, the better.
Absolutely.
It's promoting our brand.
Absolutely. And I think that that is an enormous part of it. And I think that everything that we as breeders can do to encourage more people to breed dogs. So what's your thought on that? We need more good people breeding good dogs. What's your insight? What's your thought?
There cannot be enough people doing a good job on a good cause. That's where a little bit we have some issues with social media and some of the exclusionary practices of some of the clubs and elitism and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And competition, because all of that tends to be viewing outside people as competition.
Right.
But really and truly, what's a win if you don't have competition? You know, it doesn't mean anything. So I think as though all of us as breeders are standing on the shoulders of the people who were breeding before us.
Yes.
And if we're not willing to share that knowledge and willing to share how to do this with the next, then that will become a lost art and that will go away. Because as we've seen, anything can go away.
Right.
And so breeding dogs and making an appreciation of doing it well, and everybody started somewhere.
It is right. I have this conversation pretty frequently. And I think the thing that is, from my perspective, and speak to this if you would, there's two sides to that, right? Like, we have to not be the mean girls clique, those of us who have been at this a while, and the folks who are coming and wanting to be breeders need to perhaps consider having some respect for what's gone before them.
Well, today, with all of the stuff and everything being a gotcha expose and the behind the scenes, there's a little bit of a lack of respect that I see put forward. And when someone inquires for a puppy and they turn around and say the first five lines is, all I want is a special that I can win the breed at the garden and maybe at nationals with. And I'm like, oh, well, let me run over and find that one right there for
you. Pull that right out of my pocket.
that sounds like a great idea. You know, I mean, so I think as though you're right. I think the relationships and the trust and the respect and earning it and going to a couple of years of dog shows and just showing your dog and proving that you're worth a good dog, that you'll do it.
Right.
That you've got the honest stick to it to make it worthwhile.
Right.
And I mean, it all kind of fits together. I think we as breeders, and I include myself in this, need to be more open with people. You know, because honestly, there are times I would rather drink poison than talk to someone about selling an open paper dog because it just peels years off my life. But that being said, we have to do it.
Yes.
We have to help the next generation of breeders come along. and it needs to be encouraged, and they're going to make mistakes, and they're probably going to share them on the internet, which is something we all have to get used to.
Yeah.
You know, and that will happen. And I do believe that American Kennel Club has made some good steps towards being more inclusive, and I applaud that. I think they're working towards, I mean, we tend to pick on them, but I think they are really trying to bring more people in and to be a more inclusive hobby. And it's probably not as much about breeders now.
Right. And I think that's where I know AKC is trying to bring more people, more owners and more exhibitors. And those are good things. But I think we in the fancy, the actual people doing the work, I think we're the ones who really have got to work on our resting bitch face, if you will, right? I mean, we have to be able to encourage people and encourage people to become breeders. That's my way of thinking.
Well, absolutely. Well, I think it comes down to the fact that we need to all be a little bit more generous.
Yes.
Just generous with our time and generous with encouragement. And looking at someone's situation, maybe that's not the best bitch that you've got in your kennel, or maybe it's not something that you would want to breed, but you might look at it through their situation and go, maybe that's the best they have to start with, and maybe they could go ahead and be encouraged, like, do the litter. If there's not a good puppy in there, save your money up, spay your bitch, and go buy yourself something a little nicer, that kind of thing.
Right.
There's all sorts of different ways to get to the end result.
Right.
But it's a matter of being encouraging and positive. And let's face it, so it's an awful litter. What's the worst thing that can happen? They have a happy, healthy litter of puppies to be sold as companions. That's hardly a tragedy.
Exactly. You know? Exactly that.
And if somebody learns the appreciation and they like it, then they might go forward and they might be a huge asset to the breed. I mean, I'm sure those people that were so patient with me when I was doing my obedience with my St. Bernard probably didn't think, oh, this guy's probably going to breed 500 champions later on. No, but they were still kind and considerate and encouraging.
Right.
Because I didn't have the fastest or the most zippy dog in the whole bunch, you know. So, but a long sit was a long time for that dog, you know.
Yes, I appreciate the challenges. That's, like I said, my parents had Clumber Spaniels. And the very first Clumber she got, very typical. I mean, this was such a typical thing that we had back then that I think we should do more of today. The woman who sold her this dog had a young adult male who was halfway finished with his championship, had one leg on his CD, and the deal was mom had to finish his championship and finish his CD. So I tried showing him to finish his championship and couldn't, and that was Dawn, and mom finished his CD. And Clumbers in obedience, much like St. Bernards in obedience, are good for building humility and
oh,
a sense of humor.
Exactly. As I was explaining in the bred by class just this last weekend, my puppy that has 5,000 driveway hours that all of a sudden didn't remember how to walk on the lead.
Yes.
It looked at me like I had no idea what I was talking about. Yeah, you know, there you go. That's your humility. It's like, well, you thought you were, but I guess you're not, you know. That's where this game gets. There's the live animal aspect. And that's for the non-professionals and the owners. That's the equalizer.
It's the great equalizer.
If you put your work in, you can go and you can compete with anybody, the pros, if you put your work in.
Absolutely. Well, I have like 9 million more questions, but we're sort of out of time. Truly, I think there's nothing greater in the world than talking with smart people who've been doing this successfully for a long time. So,
but you're certainly welcome to call anytime. Talking about dogs is something that never gets tiresome. And it's something that's brought a lot into my life, my wife, my best friends, you know, everything. And, you know, it's something that even we keep our family together with because they all get saddled with my extra dogs. And so, you know, hey, it's just it's all good.
It's all in the family. All right. Well, Dale, thank you so much. I will definitely be picking your brain in the future. I want to learn more about how you keep your babies alive and how the pedigrees work and all those sort of things. But we'll save that for another time.
There's a lot to talk about.
There's a lot. That's what I said. We've got a whole nother hour that we've got to do.
Easy breezy.
Easy. All right. Well, Dale, thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.